welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Let's start by talking about that second leg semi-final between Chelsea and Middlesbrough. Craig Burley, Shaka Hislop, myself, Kay Murray and Frank LeBuck will be joining us in just a moment. But it was a big win for Chelsea on the night. 6-1 on the night, 6-2 on aggregate. An own goal from Johnny Howson, goals from Enzo Fernandez, De Sassi, Cole Palmer actually getting two on the night this time around. Madueke nipped in as well with one. Morgan Rodgers did put a little consolation one on the board for Middlesbrough, but it was all Chelsea, and they were helped along by Borough, Craig.
It was just crazy how Borough continued to try and play out from the back, and it kept costing them mistake, and Chelsea took advantage of that, and Borough never changed. They kept doing it, and they paid the price.
They absolutely did, but it is now Chelsea through to the final at Wembley, where they will face the winners of the game between Fulham and Liverpool. Just mentioned, Frank LeBuff was watching it, and I'm not sure if he's happier for the result or as frustrated as what he saw from Middlesbrough tonight. But as for Chelsea, that was the response that was expected of them, Frank.
Yes, Kay, first of all, I'm very sorry about your almighty team. But Chelsea did what they had to do, but they didn't have to fool themselves in a way, because as the guy explained, you know, Middlesbrough did the job for them. What is the biggest weakness of Chelsea nowadays? They can't create any chances. So why they appointed Mr. Michael Carrick to be the best coach ever for Chelsea Football Club? And I'm saying for Chelsea Football Club, because he did everything to help the players out to score goals. He allowed his players to think that as a championship team, they could play from behind, from the back, and have no problem. That's exactly what Chelsea was looking for, because they can't create chances. So Middlesbrough tries to play from the back instead of kicking very high and just wait, park the bus, just wait for them to come and have and struggle. That it happened before the first goal. They couldn't score. They couldn't create anything except the Chilwell header. And yes, I think it was a penalty. But otherwise, it didn't create because Middlesbrough didn't give them anything. And I don't understand Michael Carrick. Really, he was an absolutely fantastic player. But what he showed today tells me that he has to improve his coaching career, because he exactly did what Pochettino was expecting from Middlesbrough, playing nowadays football. Crazy.
I don't think there's too much more to say about this game. Well,
I mean, Chelsea, professional, as Rob will mention in commentary, some bigger tasks to come, Villa and Liverpool coming up, but they can do no more. They made hard, heavy weather of the first game at the Riverside, but why do these teams keep trying to do things that they struggle to do in their own league? And if there was only a blueprint for a team that did what Middlesbrough tried to do in the Championship and had success with it, Burnley, won the Championship, playing football at the back, have come to the Premier League, tried to do the same thing, guess where they are? They're in the relegation zone, because it is so much more difficult to try and do that against elite level players. And even though Chelsea are struggling in the league, they still have very good players. And so you have to adjust your game. And even if you make a couple of mistakes, once you go 2-0 down, somebody has to say, right, let's not try and play out from the back. It's 2-1 in aggregate. One goal gets us back in. Let's squeeze up. Let's tuck the fullbacks in. Let's play it long to your two strikers. Push the midfield up behind. This is not rocket science, by the way. Try and win some second balls in Chelsea's half and let's play from there. No. Let's continue to try and do the things that have been killing us. And that's what made this tie almost unwatchable in the end. And that's what we feared when this tie came out. The two legs that... And we can be thankful that we even got to a second leg and we had something to go. What if Middlesbrough sit deep? But this was my fear from a neutral perspective, that it was going to be a mess, and tonight was a mess.
And to that point, and to Frank's, if you're Michael Carrick at Middlesbrough and you see the first leg, you see how Chelsea create all of their opportunities. You see where your opportunity comes from. How do you explain today's setup? Yes, listen, I understand you have injuries and you have to shuffle the pack, and so you decide to go to a back four. But why you decide to play a high line no pressure on the ball, while you continue to try to pass the ball out to the back, is beyond me. So it's a whole lot more than just making in-game adjustments because the wheels came off in the second leg. You saw the wheels wobbling in the first. And you do, and not only do you not address it, you double down on it. And for me, so Middlesbrough got exactly what they deserved. With that in mind, Chelsea couldn't have had an easier day. I don't think semi-finals come any easier than the 90 minutes we just witnessed. Chelsea move on. They're still in a test to come, rest assured. Chelsea can be thankful for Middlesbrough. I'll call it naivety, and I'm being as kind as I possibly can.
Well, that's the point, isn't there, Nadim? Pitch side tonight at Stamford Bridge. There are much tougher tests ahead for Chelsea now. In the FA Cup against Aston Villa, it's not going to be so easy for them.
No, you'd expect it to not be that case. I think even though Villa aren't exactly in the best moment right now, I think they do know how to play against Chelsea. I think they've won here already this season. So for Chelsea, they did what they needed to do today, and they understood there was going to be something there for them available if they went and pressed in a really organised manner. And I think some of the turnovers led to so many issues for Middlesbrough. And I think, you know, I heard you guys talk about, say, Burren playing out from the back. From what I saw with Carrick there, he wasn't telling them, you have to, you have to, you have to. I think sometimes this is one of those symptoms where players, they take on instruction, but then they're still expected to manage games, and they just didn't do that today at all. I thought they looked good at times, and they managed this well in the first leg, where they would move it, but they needed to have the threat in behind, and I think that's where, you know, the goal for Morgan Rodgers came from, and I think yellow card as well against Thiago Silva. And if you're going to play, don't play just for the sake of it. And unfortunately, I think some of those players thought, this is what we're going to do to show how good we are. But Chelsea, as the guys have said, they've got better players. They understand how to press better, and then an opportunity that can come there. But again, it's a big day for Chelsea, getting themselves to another final. You know, I think it's the second in 3 years, however long it is. But yeah, the game against Villa, that will be a tough test for them. But the players are feeling themselves, and as long as they're healthy, I think they'll believe that they can get the result.
Frank, while Nadim was talking, there was something going on. We saw some strange faces being pulled by you.
No, because I was thinking about the fact that he said that the coach didn't want them to play like that, Middlesbrough. I think he should have forbid them to play like that. That's his role. He should have a plan. He say, guys, I forbid you to play from the back. You're gonna be smashed back. I think we all agree. We are four pundits, four former players. We all agree that it was the worst to do, and that's why I don't understand. I was teasing a little bit Michael Carey, because it was obvious. During the first tie, that Chelsea couldn't create anything unless you give them the opportunity to do so. And so if he's not saying, oh, you shouldn't do too much of that, he should have said, I forbid you to do that. Kick a long ball, play higher, you know, give pressure. That's exactly what you have to do, and what you have a chance to be successful about.
All right, Chelsea won this, though.
Yeah, I think, look, the probability is Chelsea would have won this game anyway. But I think what we're trying to say is it might have been a contest. It might have been somewhat of a contest, yeah. Which in the end, well, once it got close to half-time, it wasn't a contest at all.
Chelsea doing better at home recently, though. Obviously, you can take this game and say it's against lower opposition, but this is just their recent run of results at home.
Let's just take the last five or six, right? Sheffield United, relegation, cannon fodder. Newcastle, the Trippier mistake at the end dug them out. They won on penalties. Crystal Palace, heading towards the relegation zone, talking about Roy Hodgson's job. And then you got Preston North End in the Championship, Fulham, West London derby, decent side, and Borough. So it's a bit like, in some sense, when Manchester United were having this patch, and I don't know how I've got Man United into this segment again, but because the two clubs that are spending a lot and are struggling. But when Man United had this period and Ten Hag was getting a lot of stick, and people were saying, yeah, but look at these results. We've got five wins in a row or four wins in a draw or whatever it is. But when you peeled it back and looked at who they'd been playing, the opposition was weak and they'd struggled. And that opposition there recently is pretty weak, but you can only beat what's in front of you. There's a big acid test coming up. FA Cup on Friday, which we have live against Villa, and then Liverpool. And that's where you're going to learn. You're not going to learn about your players walloping Borough by six goals at home when they're making mistakes. You're just not. You're not really going to learn a lot there. All you're going to do is get people sharpness and fitness like Chilwell, get them back into the side. get them a run of games because they've struggled in the full-back, stroke wing-back positions. That's the kind of things you can take out from it. You can't really take much else from a side that basically lie down like Borough did. So there's some huge games to come. But this is a day that when Pochettino woke up, he went, please no, please, please, just please don't let this go wrong.
Let's stay there, though, talking about Chilwell coming back and talking about their 11 today. Is this an 11 that he sticks with for these upcoming games?
Well, I don't trust Mudrić at all. I think I think what he does a lot of times, it's a head scratcher. He wants to do everything at 100 miles an hour, so I don't really trust that. Obviously, you know, Sterling and Cole Palmer are pretty much one of the first names on the team sheet. Chilwell, obviously. So, and then it's whether Conor Gallagher comes back in, he was on the bench today, or whether he sticks with what he's got. I would imagine he might stick with what he's got. So I think, I don't know about you, Shaq, I'm OK with the goalkeeper, even if Sanchez is... I like this goalkeeper. And I'm not biased because he was coached by my old teammate and best man Kevin Hitchcock, who said, by the way, this guy is going to be really good and he looks good. I think there's 7 or 8, maybe 7, you could hang your hat on and say that's who he's going to select. And there's 3 or 4 other positions, at least. Striker, one of the wide positions, maybe midfield, and then... one of the full-back positions. So it's still not a guarantee.
I think he sticks with this 11. And
do you like? But you like Mudrić against even?
I think Mudrić at least gives you some pace. The thing for me is you look at Chelsea and even when you swap personnel, you don't get much of a change. You don't get much of a change in terms of performance. You know, we could debate who should be the striker, whether it's Bro or anybody else. They need to bring somebody in. And that, for me, is the travesty of who Chelsea are right now. We keep talking about the money that they spend, but even as you change players in and out, it doesn't change the performance. It doesn't really change how good they look, aside from Gallagher, who they're trying actively to sell this January. So, to your question, yeah, I'd play the same 11. At least they got a win. At least this team is now playing with some confidence. Don't change that just yet. I think it's a very fragile confidence. It's a very fragile run. But stick with it because at least it's bringing some results.
But you've spent all this money, right? And Breuer might go before the transfer window closes if they get the right money, possibly. And it's unlikely they bring somebody in and at that late notice, but they might. But they've got this team coming up called Liverpool, who are without Mo Salah for African Cup of Nations and now injury. But yet you look at the four players, call them four players that can rotate. Luis Diaz, Cody Gakpo, Darwin Nunez, Diego Jota, right? Not perfect, but pretty good. Then you look at Chelsea and you go, oh, spent that, but look, who are we going to play there? And who's going to get the goals there? And who's going to play up front? So there's the difference. Liverpool at least have 3 or 4... pretty good options, even if you say, oh, Nunez, you know, if he's not scoring goals, he's running the channels. If he's not running the channels, he's fighting with centre-halves. It's not just about goals with him. If you get goals from Nunez, it's a bonus. But when I look at Chelsea's options in that front 3 or 4, whatever you want to call it, it's nowhere near as good as what Liverpool have.
It's almost a little bit, you know, to the point I'm making, comical, that Mudrić, all you can say is, yeah, he runs really fast. You know, that's kind of Chelsea's options right now, and you're scratching your head to identify what players bring.
Is it enough for what's ahead, Nadim?
I think, you know, if we're going to compare them to Liverpool's front line, obviously with Salah to come back in as well, then I think most sides up and down the league would struggle with that level of sort of goal scoring and contribution. But I think for the way that they played, I've got to say, Mudrić today, he was getting a lot of grief from his manager and a lot of grief as well from Enzo Fernandez on the field. He was kept barking instructions at him because every time someone's moving one way, he was supposed to be going the other and he was doing the exact opposite. And there were so many little transitions where he'd get the ball and just turn it over with like a little stupid decision. And you can see the manager was losing more and more faith in him. And I don't know if that was affecting his confidence or whatever, but for me, I don't think he's... he doesn't seem too viable for the next games. If the way that they were reacting to him today is how they think about him for the whole season. So Madueke is probably going to come back in. And yes, they don't have the sort of star power that Liverpool have up top, but they still have an ability to score. We're seeing Cole Palmer have, you know, the best season of his career so far. And you know that he can bring other people into the game. And going up against Liverpool, you will be outgunned, but it's not to say that you can't get something from that game. And even against Villa, anything is possible. I think Pochettino will probably try and find a side against Liverpool. He might be better in transition. You know, hit Liverpool on the break when maybe they overcommit to a certain extent. But for this Villa game, I think it's going to be a good footballing affair. How can they sort of manage the way that Villa like to control that centre of the field with, say, their four players in there? But again, Chelsea, they're a tough team to follow just because sometimes, you know, they can get a result, but it never looks the way that we want. But it's still a result nonetheless. And I wouldn't be surprised if they won against Villa and then maybe got something against Liverpool, because that first game of the season they had here against Liverpool was a really good game of football, and most of those faces are still playing for these two clubs.
Frank, you get the final say on Chelsea.
Well, oh, you know, they're fantastic. Best club ever. While I'm here in the stadium, it's best place ever. Never been anywhere better than Stamford Bridge.
Go on, Frank. What have you got to say?
Well, you know, I think I agree with Craig. I think Modric should go, and but I will be more keen to go into being stronger on the midfield zone. Well, it's why I will put Gallagher instead of Madueke, and maybe play, you know, try to be strong defensively and play on a transition and counterattack with Palmer, Sterling, and maybe to finish, hopefully, Broya. So, but that's the only option that you have. You know, Madueke is a good player, but playing with his instinct instead of maybe thinking a little bit more about the game like Modric does. They are talented players with a future, with good skills, but right now they're, for me, far away from what we expect from them. So Gallagher will make the midfield zone stronger, the middle of the park stronger. So it's why I would go with that option. But that's going to be a different game against the villains for sure.
Modric's just, he makes too many bad decisions to be in this Chelsea side at this moment in time. Whether it's without the ball or with the ball, his decision making is poor. And as for the makeup of the midfield, that's going to be key for this game, because Villa are really strong in there. Douglas Luiz, Boubacar Kamara, John McGinn, or whoever plays. They're very, very strong in the middle of the park. That's going to be a big test for Caicedo and Enzo Fernandez, if the other two guys that play. But Modric, he's going to have to sharpen up. He's unreliable at the moment.
OK, big test ahead. We're going to let Nadim go now. Go and get warm, Nadim. Go and enjoy the delights of London. I'm sure you know them all.
Oh, yes.
Here is the FA Cup fourth round schedule that is ahead, including that game, as Craig mentioned, that will be here on ESPN Plus Chelsea against Aston Villa on Friday. We've also got Tottenham against Man City too. Plenty of action when it comes to the FA Cup, including Liverpool's game against Norwich City on Sunday. To La Liga we go now. Top of the table looks like this. Girona 1 point ahead of Real Madrid, a game ahead of them too. And it was a big weekend in terms of the title race, particularly in terms of contentious VAR decisions in Real Madrid's game against Almeria, who are still yet to win a game all season in La Liga. So we wanted to revisit this, Craig.
How good were Girona, by the way, again in that game against Sevilla? It was utterly brilliant, wasn't it?
They were.
Have I skirted away from that a little bit?
Yeah.
What do you want to talk about? Which one? Real Madrid?
We're going to talk about the three big decisions in that Real Madrid game, because we had Mark Clattenburg on, as you know, and he said one of the three was right, and our VAR man Dale Johnson agrees with that.
Well,
and one of the three he was OK with.
Dale Johnson's a journalist.
Well, he does his VAR.
I drive cars.
He's back in Clats. Frank's still with us, by the way.
Nothing against Dale, but Dale's not our... He's not...
OK.
He's not our arbiter of the rules, is he? He's a journalist.
Well, let's see if you agree with him then. Let's start with Real Madrid's...
I didn't see the show yesterday. I don't know what Clattenburg said.
OK.
Why did you say you drive cars? Well, you just said you drive cars all of a sudden.
Yeah. I'm a racing driver then, isn't I? So...
He said goal was right, and the other two decisions.
I don't
were
agree
wrong.
With that. I don't agree with it. And I know I was listening to Shaq on Sunday, I believe. The defining angle from behind the goal And bearing in mind you're scoring a goal. The defining angle for Vinicius Jr. behind the goal was, and as Jack said, his arm sort of comes up towards it as well.
Yeah.
So this is the angle coming up.
This is the angle. I thought I was telling. That one. Yeah.
There's another one somewhere that shows. Anyway, so I honestly don't think that here. Look at the arm. Yeah. For me, that should not stand.
Okay.
Because you're scoring a goal, basically, and I believe the decision on the field was
a
handball.
Yeah, disallowed it for handball.
Yes. So again, we've re-refereed that one. I mean, if it hit him, I don't want to get into this little straw man that they had on the show the other day, the little IFAB thing. I don't want to get into that. But if it hit him square on the shoulder, yeah, but it didn't. I mean, it was down here. And there was that movement, which I think you talked about.
Yeah, I thought it was handball. I get the point that many are making, that, you know, from one angle, it looks fine. If, as a referee, you see both, I think without question, you see that's a handball for me.
OK, so that's the Vinny goal. The Real Madrid penalty that Bellingham took, that got them back in the game.
The handball. With the two Real Madrid players claiming it. I think
Rudiger was adjudged to have handballed it.
Yeah, well, there's two fouls. Rudiger is fouling the player in front, if you watch.
Yeah.
Right? Well, you could argue that. Rudiger is fouling the player in front, and Hosselu, you could argue, is leaning on the defender and pushes him forward. And pushing the forward motion, which I think the way Luis Garcia described it, it results in the ball coming off the arm. Again, I agreed with his assessment at the weekend, which was it was harsh. I mean, it should have been a foul. And it was two fouls.
And to the point that you were just making, on the field, the referee gives a goal kick or a corner, whatever it was, and all of a sudden, being called back to the monitor to re-referee that. I find it all really bemusing.
And then the last of them,
yeah,
was the VAR disallowed goal for Sergio Arribas.
Well, you can't touch anybody by this. I mean, as a player, right?
This is a foul player.
What we do is, right, let me tell you something. Jude Bellingham at this point is already off the ground, right? He's been seen to by the medics, jokingly. Now, look at him go down there. I got a lot of time for Jude Bellingham, like a lot of people. He's had a great season. But within 5 seconds of getting knocked over here and looking as if he's about to die, he picks himself up and he's watching the play. It's overreaction, nothing more. As a player, when I'm shielding the ball, or Frank Leboeuf shielding the ball from a player coming in, do you want us to do it? Again, it's a bit like the penalties with the hands at the side. It's a natural motion when you're playing the game that you shield. Now, every now and again, if it's not an elbow or even a forearm, when you're shielding, there's going to be contact. And that's all that was for me there. Bellingham overreacts. He's up on his feet within a few seconds. And a very, very good goal is disallowed. So that's three goals. Three incidents from Almeria's perspective. No wonder that head coach was on the touchline. Bearing in mind the season that they've had, last time out, they outplayed Girona, got a draw. Here they are in the Bernabeu, score after 30, 40 seconds, score another great goal, have all these decisions against them, including the one for the goal that was going to make it 3-1. I disagree. I think all three were...
The final outcome, you disagree with all of them when it comes to the final outcome.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. And what the referee, again, on this occasion, never gave a free kick.
No, yeah,
so he's basically been... He has basically been cajoled by...
Because he was looking right at the play.
Yeah.
Every decision, he's gone with his instinct and gone, no, I'm good with that. And it's the old gremlins in the ear going, oh... You need to go and have a look at that. And all of a sudden, he's second-guessing himself and he goes to the monitor and we know the story from there.
Frank, do you agree with any of the final outcomes here?
Yes, I do. And it's, for me, insane. When I see that again, that And again, you know, you cannot blame the referee on the field. As the guy said, he's really the guy on the monitor, Mr. Hernandez, who decided to change something and to alert the referee wrongly. And now he's going to conspiracy theory about, you know, many, many things that I don't want to go through right now. But it's so big. It's so obvious that the guy in the monitor is completely wrong three times, that the ref is right three times, and these decisions have been changed. So, of course, you're going to go to the big picture, and because everybody thinks it's too big. It's too obvious. They're going to see that. The people are going to see that. And even if you're Real Madrid, and if you have a big team, you know, that night, you shouldn't have won. Because Almeria should have scored three goals, and it should have been the end of it. And all the decisions are wrong. And we are three former players. We can agree immediately on that. Why somebody who's in the monitor, who obviously knows nothing about football and the way the football players feel the football, changes all the decision. That's absolutely, again, insane.
And Craig drives cars, just to have a home that point.
I was so intrigued.
I'll be honest with you, I watch a lot of police shows, you know, at night when I go home, but I don't, whenever there's a murder in town, nobody rings me to be the detective.
All right, let's talk about Barcelona then while we are talking about La Liga. Latest reports is that there is turmoil in that dressing room.
Oh, not again.
Not the happiest of places. Well, the reports...
How can they be so unhappy when they've just made that great cup, that great win against Real Betis?
Okay. But yeah, Betis. They were the first team to win there all season.
Torres hat-trick. Lewandowski, off you come.
Well...
João Felix off the bench, great goal.
Okay, so...
The 2 16-year-olds play. How? Lamine Yamal's down the wing,
it's not a place of harmony. Apparently, players openly challenging Xavi in that dressing room. The reports are saying that after that game against Unionistas, yeah, Lewandowski challenged the coach. He was overheard speaking loudly, this is according to the report, about the team that was put out.
Yep.
Overheard.
Yep.
So that, you know, he didn't mind who heard him doing that.
Do you know what Robert Lewandowski needs to do? I'll tell you. Play better. That might help. If he plays better, because he's the big guy, right? He's the talisman. You might argue it's Gundogan and Frankie de Jong and whoever, right? Pedri is a youngster. But this guy's the talisman. They brought him in to continue doing what he was doing for Bayern Munich, right? And we can talk about age and whatever, right? But he's not doing that. He's not doing that, and he's been, I was going to say vocal, but actually whiny from the start of the season. Ever since he was roughed up in the game at, was it the Getafe game? Mm-hmm. I think it was Getafe away. Mm-hmm. And I get it, that was over the top stuff. But ever since that day, he's moaned and he's groaned about the league, about the referees, about the standard, about the lack of service to him, about his teammates, it seems on the face of it. He's whining about the manager. Is Robert Lewandowski actually whining about the one thing that he can make a change? And that's Robert Lewandowski himself.
But he isn't the only one, right? Because Gundogan did say after the Clásico, remember, that he didn't expect a dressing room like that, that he didn't felt the dressing room was hurting.
But that's not Xavi's fault. If he's got a bunch of guys who are younger players in the dressing room, and look, Xavi can... The buck will stop with the manager. But it's not really the manager's fault... But it is his job to deal with it. If they go in the dressing room after dominating a Clásico, but unravelling in the final 20 minutes, as it did, and they did, and they lost, and players come in and are not angry or upset about it or frustrated, it's only Xavi's job to have a go at that, if he feels right, or leave it to the senior players. That's not his fault if a player comes in and goes... And I'm not suggesting this happened, but they come in and go, "Well, we lost the game, but we played really well today." And that's generally not how players would react after a huge game like that.
Here's my question around that: what is Gundogan doing in terms of changing the culture? He was brought in for a reason, and I feel more than just his playing ability. Now, the more these stories come out, the more I feel there's a lack of accountability from some of Barcelona's biggest names. And that's an issue. And while Barcelona continue to do this incredible job of bringing through young players, you have to rely on the more senior, more experienced players to kind of shape the culture in that dressing room. These are kids who are not used to playing in this kind of environment, with this kind of pressure, how to handle losses or wins. So my question is, what is going on doing in terms of, here we have a player who's just come off the most successful season a club could just about ask for with Manchester City. He comes into Barcelona. What is he doing in terms of changing that culture? Where's his accountability? We know Robert Lewandowski, he's devoid of any kind of accountability. We saw that way back in his Bayern days when he wasn't winning the top scorer in the league title. He was blaming everybody else for the lack of service. Earlier on this season, did exactly the same, blaming the lack of service. Now, there's a total lack of, as I say, accountability from Lewandowski. If he has a look at the chances that he's spurned, I'm not sure how you come in and just throw criticism everywhere else. So now all of a sudden it's gone from not that Lewandowski isn't playing well, but that Xavi isn't picking the right team, that Xavi isn't doing what he's supposed to do. And I just don't feel that these senior players in particular aren't pulling their respective weights within that dressing room. It has to be a combined effort.
As you said, Shaq, he's got a history. Sorry, Frank, Lewandowski have thrown his toys out the pram. And as Shaq mentioned, he did it in Germany when he felt he was not going to win this award, and he wasn't getting enough goals, and he was blaming teammates for not doing this and not doing that. But guess what? He kind of was able to get away with it in Germany because Bayern was so dominant. And as we sit here now, they still are until Leverkusen or somebody else dethrones them. But in Spain, it's not like that, as you know. There is, you know, if it's not Real Madrid, it's Atletico Madrid or somebody. There's always a real rivalry there that's putting pressure on one of the big two. If it's not one of the big two themselves fighting with each other, there's somebody else sniping around. And so the pressure, the bottom line, there's a way more pressure, right, no matter what anybody says, in Spain than there is in Germany. Way more pressure.
But to that point, you could do that in Real Madrid. Lewandowski could have this kind of attitude at Real Madrid where you have 10 other fully established international footballers. But when you have a dressing room like Barcelona's, when you have a starting 11 with two 16-year-olds, and then here comes a player who some argue should have won the Ballon d'Or a couple of seasons ago, coming in and throwing his toys out every time things don't go well, what does that say to them? How does that shape that dressing room going forward? It's a totally different Arsenal and Lewandowski, and in my opinion, he's failing the bigger picture for as to what's needed in the Barcelona dressing room.
So none of this is on Xavi, Frank.
Well, I have a hard time, like the guys, to find Xavi guilty of everything. Yes, he has his part of responsibility because he's the coach. And maybe, smashing the table in the dressing room and say, you know what, why don't you shut up and listen to me? I'm going to tell you what to do. That's the problem of our, I think I see the old picture again, where it's a kind of a reflection of our society, where as soon as something doesn't work, you blame the other nowadays. We play a collecting sport, and what I see is only selfishness. And you only think about what can be good for you because it doesn't work for everyone. And normally, I would say that in my time, the experienced players were trying to guide the youngest and to find terms, you know, in the dressing room, how to work together. Now, the experienced player, the senior players, as soon as it doesn't work, they blame the coach, but they go public on top of it instead of dealing in the dressing room. I don't understand those generation. I was expecting much more from Lewandowski, even De Jong, and Undogan, of course. But it's very sad to see that, because it makes me think of our society, where nowadays we don't try to help each other. We try to blame each other, and we don't take any responsibility for our acts. And that's coming from a collective sport, coming from an education for sharing stuff. It's very hard to see.
I think if there is, and these are kind of reports and stuff. And,
yeah, and leaks.
Usually there's no, there's no smoke without fire. If Xavi wants to get this, if there is a dressing room problem or whatever, if he wants to get that respect back, it's a bit like the little kid in the playground who's getting picked on by the big guy. If you want to get the respect of others, you've got to take the big guy down. And I think he might he's at a stage where I think he might have to make a statement by leaving Lewandowski out. Two reasons. One, the players sit back and go, wow, if he's prepared to leave him out, he's prepared to leave me out. Now, you can lose a dressing room if you do that, but at the moment, it seems there's too many murmurings for him not to do anything. And also the fact is, he's not playing very well. Right? He's not playing very well. And, you know, Torres got himself the hat-trick. He's a pacier player. And I really don't believe that it is out with the bounds of reality to drop Robert Lewandowski. Now, if you'd said that to me 12 months ago, I'd have said, no, they absolutely need him. And this, as you said, this was a brilliant ball from Lamine Yamal. Just crazy. And that was a great finish. And I think we're at a stage for this guy that Barca might actually be a better, more efficient, quicker, more dynamic side without Robert Lewandowski in it. And it might also send a statement to the dressing room to say, go against me. If you're not doing it on the field, you're not playing.
Well, let's see if they can make any sort of statement in their next game against Athletic. That will be coming up and will be discussed tomorrow on the show. So be sure to be with the boys as they look back on that clash. Just taking a look at the bottom end of the Premier League standings. You can see Nottingham Forest there in 16th spot and 20 points so far. And there's a lot of talk right now that they are in talks with Gio Reyna.
Well, they got 20 points at the moment.
They might not have. Anyway, it's said to be advanced talks as well, so we're going to welcome in Julien Laurent to tell us more about this and what he knows. Gio Reyna to Nottingham Forest, Jules.
Hi, Kay. Yeah, this is the most advanced talk for Gio Reyna. We reported last week on the website that there were a few clubs around Europe that he's been offered to by Jorge Mendes, his new agent, and obviously Nottingham Forest, where Jorge Mendes has a very strong influence, let's put it that way, was one of those clubs. And it seems that Claudio Reyna and Gio Reyna, who eventually will decide where Gio is going to play, like the idea of coming to the Premier League, coming to England and play for Forest, whose coach is obviously one of Jorge Mendes' other clients in Nuno Espirito Santo. So again, you can clearly understand how this transfer could come about.
So he's looking for regular playing time, but in a team that's struggling, is this it?
Well, he's only got to be better than what's there. And I think, you know, if it's a loan, it works for him, because Forest could well be relegated depending on form and points deduction. But you look at the wide players, or you look at the positions, Morgan Gibbs-White will play in that number 10 role. Normally, if fit, Gio Reyna can play there. But if he wants to play wide, he's looking at Anthony Elanga and he's looking at Callum Hudson-Odoi, who haven't been regulars in the side and haven't played consistently well. So there is, and by the way, I think Gio Reyna's a better player than those guys. Maybe, you know, Hudson-Odoi's regressed a little bit. He was going to Bayern Munich for 30 million, it seemed, a couple of years ago, and didn't get game time at Chelsea, goes to Forest, been a bit of a hit and a miss. So I think Reyna could get game time there, but he potentially is going into the side now is a little bit more progressive under Nuno Espirito Santo than it was under Steve Cooper. Under Steve Cooper, in the end, for as good a job as he did, it was a very stoic, defensive sort of shape. The new coach is trying to change that, so it could potentially work for him. But he just, whether it's Forest, whether it's any other team in any other league, he just has to make sure two things happen. One, he stays healthy and fit, which has been a problem. And two, he's not sat on his backside on the bench. Those are the two things that Gio Reyna needs to avoid to kickstart his career again.
In terms of talent, I think Gio Reyna gets into the Nottingham Forest starting 11. I almost don't think there's much doubt about it. But the thing with Gio Reyna for me is, I always feel he's one of those players who's remonstrating on the pitch with teammates when things don't go his way. You're playing in a team that's struggling, things don't go your way a lot of the time. does he then become a liability if that starts happening and happening with some consistency? What teams like Forest, what teams on the bottom half of the table need are players who come in, roll their sleeves up and play from the opening whistle to the absolute last. Talent-wise, I have no questions, no concerns about Gio Reyna. Mentality-wise and that personality-wise is where I'm a little sceptical.
Let's continue with the transfer talk and the transfer rumours as well, Jules. Karim Benzema wanting out of Saudi Arabia. Where are his possible landing spots? What are his options?
Well, it's a good question, Kev, because we know that Al Ittihad don't want to let him go, which is part of the problem. We explained last week on the website that he was exploring all options, and really I think his favourite one was to leave Saudi Arabia and the Saudi League. He's just not happy there. It's not, even if he scored many goals, it's just not happening for him. He's just not happy there. But imagine the Saudi Pro League and PIF, which bankrolls the four biggest clubs that they have in their league. Benzema was obviously one of the marquee signing, if not the marquee signing in the summer. To let him go 6 months after he arrived would be a disgrace. They would certainly see it as a disgrace. So I don't think they will open the door. However, if he can make them open the door and can have that transfer that he really, really wants, then I think there are not many clubs. He can't go back to Real Madrid, so he would not go to another Spanish club. I think that's pretty clear. I think England is somewhere that he would like to go, but let's not forget that Karim is 36 years old, and I'm not sure if at that age, even for a six-month stint, a Manchester United or a Chelsea would be keen. I would love to see him in the Premier League, of course. It's a league that has always appealed to him, to be fair, but I'm just not sure what kind of clubs would come for him. So then, you're left with Italy, going back home to Lyon. Maybe that's a possibility, but it's a really hard, I think, transfer to make for John Textor. And then they've just signed Gift Orban from Ghent. They have Lacazette, who's still there. But if you bring Benzema home, I think the fans will love you forever. So we can't rule this one out, but I still think that unless Al Ittihad opens the door, which is very unlikely, he won't be able to move.
You reap what you sow, don't you?
In terms of choosing to go there?
Absolutely, because, you know, you go over there, they're trying to build something. We know the mentality that they have in Saudi Arabia. It's their way or the highway. And as Joe said, there's already murmurings from other players. We've just seen Jordan Henderson leave, but there are others who are voicing concerns about being unhappy. Nothing to do with me. But all I'm saying is if you want to leave Saudi Arabia, it's on their terms. And Karim Benzema will have to deal with that. They don't muck around. So you make the decision to go there, but you're going to have to toe the line, I'm afraid.
One player that does seem to know his next destination is Calvin Phillips, and it looks as though that destination is West Ham, Jules. We'll get a little word on that, but why haven't Newcastle come in for a player like this?
Well, when Newcastle coming for a player like who?
Like Calvin Phillips.
Oh, sorry. I just don't think they can. Financially, we've explained on the show already that they're under massive strain in terms of how much they spend before. They need to sell before anything else, really, before signing anyone. Even a loan player with huge wages. Let's not forget, West Ham covered the whole wages of Calvin Phillips. There's nothing that City are going to pay for the next 6 months or for the rest of the season in terms of wages for Calvin Phillips, which is really rare. Usually when a player from a top club like a Man City player on huge wages, when he gets loaned out, they go 50-50, they go 60-40, they find a way, but the club that owns him still pay subsequent amount of the wages. With West Ham, they pay everything, and I just don't think that Newcastle can pay everything. Right now, they're in under so much pressure financially to fit within all the rules in the Premier League and also in Europe that they just can't afford anybody unless they sell. And that's why I think Calvin Phillips was never really a possibility for them.
Okay, Hammer of the Year, Mayor of Newcastle. Where do you stand on this? What have you got to say about it, Shaka?
The move to West Ham makes an awful lot of sense. Ever since the departure of Declan Rice, I think West Ham have been crying out for that mould of a defensive midfielder. Calvin Phillips, Declan Rice has left very huge shoes for Calvin Phillips to try to fill. But when you see some of West Ham's performances, you do feel you need somebody who can cover that ground to at least allow some more attacking thought plays from midfield. Everything about West Ham's midfield has been just so defensive outside of Paqueta. And so he comes in and allows David Moyes to do a little bit more, to be a little bit more adventurous. So I think it's a step in the right direction. I understand, I sympathise. Newcastle, given their injuries, they could probably do with some strengthening, but finances as they are, as I've been saying all along, despite the worth of the ownership, they are going to do things slowly. They're going to respect the regulations, especially when you see what's happening elsewhere in the league. And they are thinking very much long term. So they decided a hands-off approach.
Good move for Phillips.
Well, really good. I think really good move for both player and club. A good player, one that's not been good enough, obviously, to break into this Man City side, but that's no shame when you look at who he's up against, Rodri, and then bringing in the experienced Mateo Kovacic. But Calvin Phillips is absolutely wasted there, so happy to see him go away, and he'll get game time at West Ham, and as long as he's fit enough, I think he'll improve West Ham, because he's a good player. And don't forget, even when he's not been playing at City, he's still been one of the first choices for Gareth Southgate for England, along with Declan Rice. So I think people know what his worth is. And be good for his career to get it kick-started again.
Meanwhile, Jules, Bayern's pursuit of Kieran Trippier goes on while we are on the subject of Newcastle. And it looks as though they are going to keep hammering away and trying to get this deal done.
Yeah, they will push until the end, I think until the end of the month. They had a second offer rejected today for around 15 million euros, which you can say is still a lot of money for a 33-year-old who's hadn't really had a good season so far. But in the situation financially that Newcastle are in, I think to let somebody like Trippier, who's so important for them in terms of leadership and everything he brings to this team on and off the field, is they value him certainly as more than 50 million euros, because you can let him go, but the idea is still that they finish top four or certainly top six, and they obviously have more chances to do that with Trippier in their team. So unless Bayern increase their offer quite massively, which I don't think they will, then I don't think he will move there.
Newcastle insisting on him staying, the player keeping his mouth shut, obviously, but Bayern continuing to push Xhaka.
Yeah, listen, I have to admit that the news of the bid kind of surprised me, that Bayern were interested in Kieran Trippier, but so be it. They've made some other signings. This transfer window that confused me a little bit. But Kieran Trippier is very important to Newcastle. And not just as a player, but to, as Jules mentioned, as a leader. And I think the way he kind of garners fan support as well. Remember, Kieran Trippier was Eddie Howe's first signing in January 2022, when the team were rooted at the bottom of the table. And so he is seen as so transformational for Newcastle, and has been embraced as such. And then, totally opposite from the Barcelona conversation, when things aren't going well, here is Kieran Trippier, who's going to the fans and trying to take some of the heat away from some of the other players. A player who has real leadership quality. So is loved throughout by everybody for every single reason. Even despite his poor spell, playing-wise, I don't think that diminishes his importance to Newcastle United. So you understand Newcastle holding out for top dollar.
If they're not going to get it, are they?
I don't think they will. But if for some reason they do, be assured that Kieran Trippier will be welcomed back to Newcastle.
I mean, Bayern Munich, as Joe said, are not going to all of a sudden say, oh, you know, let's give you 35, 40 million for a 33-year-old. That's just pie in the sky. And I mean, it'd be sheer stupidity if they did. But, you know, if Eddie Howe was to lose, as Shaq said, such an important member and such a stalwart of a player, notwithstanding the bad sort of 4 or 5 weeks that he has had, but that's been sandwiched in between a really good period. If he was to lose him for 15 million, that's doing nothing. All you're doing is losing the player. That's a drop in the ocean. Yeah. In today's market and finances, 15 million. So I can totally understand. It's a two-way street here, because I'm sure, I don't know, but I'm sure Trippier enjoys playing at Newcastle. It's a great place, great crowd. They're a good side, but Bayern Munich, it's still a draw, isn't it? You know, 33, couple of years left, maybe at the top, at most. Potentially the Champions League. All right, he's already played in the Champions League.
Couple, you know, of your England
going for
there.
Huh?
Couple, yeah, of your England
going for
there.
A domestic league anyway. Potentially with Leverkusen, it's such a big club. that's hard to not go into Eddie Howe and sort of bang the door down and say, I want this move, which it doesn't seem that the player's doing at this moment in time.
Because we see Chelsea with that big win today over Middlesbrough Jules, we wanted to get your take on the latest from Breuer and Gallagher in this transfer window.
Well, that hasn't really changed. I think Ian Madsen left the club on loan with an option to buy from Borussia Dortmund. And we've mentioned many times before, it's a bit like the Newcastle situation in a way, where Chelsea needs some money coming in before going out again and buying a centre forward, a goalkeeper, whatever they want. They need to sell first. So Madsen, although I don't think they should have let him go, but it was let go for that reason. And you can't obviously rule out that someone like Broja, someone like Gallagher will go for the same reasons. Really, I don't think it's, Pochettino doesn't want them to go, although Broja is slightly different status in that team. I think he's not good enough to lead a Chelsea team that want to go back to the top. I mean, we could, to be fair, say probably the same for Gallagher, but I think Gallagher is a more key player in the eyes of Pochettino than Broja is. But however, the dynamic is the same for them. They are a product from your academy, so any transfer fee that you get from them is straight profit into your bank account, which is right now, and everything that Chelsea needs is that. So I think they will stay, but if there was a player potentially able to come in for Chelsea, then they would have to sell first, and one of the players that would have to be sold would be either Gallagher or Broja.
So Victor Osimhen has also been a little bit vocal recently when it comes to the transfer window. Here's what he had to say. He said, I've already made my decision on the next step to do at the end of the season. I already made up my mind. I already have my plan. I know what I want to do, the next step I want to take. I think 60% of the people mentioned the rumours about me linked with the Premier League. I want to finish the season with Napoli strong, then come up with the decision I've already made.
Well, hold on, am I missing something here? Didn't he just sign a new contract?
I think so,
well,
yeah.
This is what we're coming to Jules on. And I just like the way that he's brought up the Premier League himself there as well.
I mean, good for Osimhen to talk. He's obviously in Ivory Coast at the moment with Nigeria for AFCON. Craig is right. He's just signed a new deal with a huge release clause of 130 million euros. And maybe Osimhen knows already that one club will pay that release clause, whether that's Man United or Chelsea. I think right now, to be honest, unless PSG are without Kylian Mbappe and they can put that money on the table, but if Mbappe stays, the only clubs really that can afford Victor Osimhen right now are the English clubs. And within the Premier League, Man City are not going to spend that on Osimhen. Arsenal don't have that kind of money right now. So you look again at Manchester United or Chelsea, and that's pretty much it. Spurs are not going to spend that. Liverpool, certainly not. So if he already knows, it must be one of those two clubs. Unless, again, Mbappe leaves PSG to go to Real Madrid, and then PSG can try to come in for Victor Osimhen. But apart from that, it can only be really two clubs in Europe right now who can go for him.
Anything to say there? No?
No.
I was just wondering, it's funny that you brought up Mbappe, because what if Real Madrid went for Osimhen and left Mbappe in the lurch, Jules?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, before anything happens between Real Madrid and Osimhen, Real Madrid are waiting right now for Kylian's answer. And Kylian has to make that choice, and we've said it a million times on the show. Either he stays a bit longer in Paris or he goes to Real Madrid. This is it. I mean, there's Liverpool, of course, in the race, but right now, the offers that he has are one from PSG for a new deal and one for a transfer to Real Madrid. This is it. So if Real Madrid want to go for Osimhen, Mbappe will have to say no first, and then Real Madrid can decide what they want to do. Chasing Haaland, going for Osimhen, going for Vlahovic, going for Rafael Leao, going for whoever they want, really. But first and foremost for them, they are waiting on Mbappe's answer, whether he's joining them or not. And if he joins them, then there will be no Osimhen and certainly no Haaland this summer going to Real Madrid either.
So if Real are waiting on Mbappe, and Osimhen has already made his mind up, let's rule PSG out, let's rule Real Madrid out. So that's the only move here it's only
you've been watching these police shows again.
only Chelsea I can see kind of making this splash.
But they can't at the moment. Well, they can if they get a load of players out in the summer.
That's the thing. I mean, at this point, Chelsea and their spending, I don't think anybody could explain. how they're not in trouble already is beyond me. So might as well just get yourself in more trouble and ask.
How are Real Madrid not? How's Florentino Perez must go home and Jesus, this guy's annoying me. I've been waiting on his answer for 2 years. We had his answer 18 months ago, whatever it is. We had his answer. His answer was he was coming and he changed his mind. Made me look stupid again, even more stupid than when I was on my pedestal trying to push for the Super League. So, you know, it's... Let's not let Victor Osimhen become the new Kylian Mbappe.
All right.
Where we come on here every day and it's like, where's Victor going today?
We might have caused that a little.
Yeah, you know.
We are speculating.
You know that's going to happen.
Here as well.
You know that's going to happen.
Yes.
Between him and Mbappe, we're going to talk with somebody.
This is the show for it. And this is the website for all the transfer talk. ESPN FC, make sure to head on over there to see all the latest rumours and murmurings.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Another dramatic day in the Africa Cup of Nations. Andre Onana bench for Cameroon, who absolutely had to win their game against Gambia. And at one point, it looked as though they were going to be on their way out of the competition. But two late goals came their way and the chance to advance as well. They are through to the knockout stages. Jules is with us now. But what a crazy game it was for Cameroon, and what a crazy ending as well, Jules.
Oh, incredible, really, because they haven't been playing well so far in this tournament. There was a lot of pressure on Rigobert Song, of course. It's been a bit shambolic with the Onana staying in Manchester for longer, missing the first game, playing in the second, but being really, really poor. Samuel Eto'o, of course, getting involved a lot, Rigobert Song, and we heard what happened before the Senegal game, where he very patronizingly said, like, well, we're above them, we've always been better than them, basically, and then they get spanked in that game. So it was just so shambolic. And when they went 2-1 down, you think, okay, this is it, and now this is going to be like an earthquake, and they turn it around in a most dramatic way, incredible way. Yesterday's day was mad in AFCON. Today was again complete madness in what happened to Cameroon, of course, and then later on what happened to Algeria too.
Well, you mentioned it, Jules. Shock of the day, Mauritania beating Algeria, which means Algeria are out of the tournament. Algeria failing to progress, Jules.
Incredible, really. This is the biggest news of this competition, even more than Ghana yesterday being knocked out as well. Algeria, who finished bottom of their group, really. And when you see the group, we've just seen the rankings. It's incredible. They were bottom in the last AFCON too, by the way. They missed out on the World Cup, being knocked out in the playoffs, in the African playoffs by Cameroon too. So Jamel Belmadi had a rotten time since winning, obviously, AFCON, like two AFCONs ago, basically, a few years ago. And his time is finished there, of course. He dropped Riyad Mahrez. Basically, Algeria needed 1 point to qualify tonight, just 1 point. Mauritania has never won a single game in AFCON in their history. They've never even led in an AFCON game in their whole life, in their whole history. And yet they go and beat Algeria tonight. Incredible. Mahrez came on at halftime, was dreadful through the whole second half. It was just a terrible performance from an Algeria team that, despite all the talent that they have, just never functioned, not just in this competition, but like we've said, for the last 2 years.
So already seeing the surprises and a lot more talk about this and many more things over on the Gab and Jules podcast. Thanks so much for being with us, Jules. We'll speak to you again soon. But if you do want to hear more from Jules, make sure to download the Gab and Jules show. Anyway, after that game at Stamford Bridge, which Chelsea absolutely thrashed Borough in, Alexis Nunes caught up with Mauricio Pochettino.
Mauricio, congratulations. From a 1-0 loss to goal after goal after goal times six, what did you find was the biggest difference from the match at Middlesbrough to here at Stamford Bridge?
Yes, the difference that we were so clinical today, and the performance was similar, but looked different when you score goals. And yes, that I think was the main difference. And today we play well, and I think we were very clinical and so happy, because I think it's a big step for us to reach the final.
Of course, a final for you. Does it feel like things are coming together? You also got some players back who scored again tonight. Are things finally clicking at the right time for you?
No, I think that I never complain about the performance, because after nearly 7 months, I see the performance 85%. I think I was always happy that we were not clinical enough, and all the chances that we create, we struggle to convert. But I think today, I think every time that we arrive, was goal. Yes, that is why we are so happy. It's to build our confidence. We are a young team, and that we need to. We need this type of games and this type of situation to live all together, to grow.
And we were sitting just behind you, and it kind of reminded me in the first half of watching Cholo Simeone as well. You couldn't sit down. You were very animated, and you forget that Chelsea scored so many goals in the first half. What was going through your mind watching that first half? And Cholo is always a good thing.
Cholo is my friend. He's my friend, and we have amazing, and he's a great coach, one of the greatest coach. Yes, of course. Sometimes this type, it's massive, no, to achieve and to go to Wembley and for this team and for the player. And I think I was nervous, but I wanted to help in some way from outside, like the coaching staff need to stay, in the place, because if not, need to go out. But I think for me that I can stand up and stay there. I think trying to help, in any circumstance, and that's why I was a little bit annoying moving on.
Well, no problem. It's sangre latino. Thank you so much, Mauricio.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, there we go. Obviously, Fulham against Liverpool now to find out who will face Chelsea in the final. And everybody thinks Liverpool are going to advance here. But Frank Lepoff has got Fulham winning 3-2 and then advancing on penalties. Obviously, Liverpool coming into
it's the old
with,
World Cup prediction
with
again.
2-1 leads.
Canada.
Oh, Craig, don't forget the last time I was on my own, I said it was a draw for Manchester United against Liverpool, and I was right.
Yeah.
So be careful. I want a Southwest London final at Wembley.
That's Frank, you know what they say about broken clocks?
Yeah.
So why? So come on then, why Fulham?
But we'll see. You know what? I think Fulham is capable of doing some trouble, really, to Liverpool. And we all had question marks about the fact that Salah wasn't there, and maybe they will struggle scoring goals. And because they scored 4 goals the last game, everything is perfect in a perfect world. I don't see that easy for them playing at Cottage Craven, because Fulham will have a chance to go to Wembley as well. And I think they can score goals and win that game. So Liverpool can struggle. I know it's against all odds, but I go for it. That would be fantastic, because I will call everybody after the game and I will tease everybody like I did last time with Manchester United.
You know why he chose Fulham? Because he thinks Chelsea can beat Fulham. He can't see Chelsea beating Liverpool, so
that's
he's
true.
Like, how am I going to get this?
That's completely true.
That's
well, he's done two things tonight. He's the only man that's gone, the only person that's gone for Fulham to win, and he's the only person that's called it Cottage Craven.
I bet that's the French way, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's true. Craven Cottage, sorry, Craven Cottage.
Now, if Fulham do go through...
It's late, it's late.
If Fulham do go through... He won't mention it, will he?
No, oh God.
Frank.
For first thing you have to do is block. Is you have to block him because
I can't. I've already blocked him.
Oh, you've already blocked him.
Yeah, I've blocked him already.
Yeah, unblock him and then block him again.
I'll unblock him.
I will find a way.
Yeah, he'll find his way. Yeah, he gave me a scathing report for Middlesbrough at halftime as well on WhatsApp. I need to block him too. Anyway, make sure to be with the gang tomorrow for Fulham against Liverpool. Obviously, that coverage will begin at 2:30 for all the build-up, and we'll see if Frank's right, shall we? Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
To the Bundesliga we go. This is how things are looking for Bayern Munich right now. They have got some catching up to do. Yes, they are a game behind Bayer Leverkusen, but they're 7 points behind them too. So make sure to join us tomorrow as we see Bayern in that makeup game against Union Berlin. Yes, there's some pressure on Bayern right now. There really is, because Bayer Leverkusen don't look to be going anywhere.
No, well, Bayer Leverkusen have not been brilliant in the last two games, but they've got two, you know, late goals. They were much better in the second half in Leipzig, played really well. But they've got their own problems. They've got people away at the AFCON and other competitions, and Boniface is injured, and Patrick Schick needs to really step up. But I think we can't question their character, there's no doubt. And they're unbeaten this season. That's amazing in the league. They haven't lost a game. Bayern Munich keep throwing up these... They're almost like anomalies. You think, nah, there's no way. You know, the Pokal, they went out to some lower league team, crashed. Every now and again, this team under Tuchel go out and there's a performance where he's just scratching his head. And he said it on... I was following Ralf Hoenigstein and Tuchel was saying, oh... I don't understand because, you know, my players in training have been really, really good. And I'm like, because training's training. And what you do in training doesn't necessarily correlate to what you're going to do on a field. Because that's where the pressure is. That's where it matters. In training, it's easy. And what we're finding here, this is a Bayern team that are under pressure from particularly Bayer Leverkusen to really limit the mistakes. And I'm not sure this team can limit the mistakes. I really don't. So... whilst they've got a game in hand and it's not as bad as it looks at the moment in terms of the points, two or three bad results could see them by, what is it, February the 10th?
February 10th, they meet each other.
By the time they get to this game against Leverkusen, if they don't get their act together, this gap could be 10 points or thereabouts. And that's a big task to try and pull that back.
He gave them what for, apparently, in the dressing room as well after that Werder Bremen loss.
Absolutely. I mean, it had to be done. Something had to be said because that was as poor a Bayern performance I could remember seeing. And so the result against Werder Bremen, something needed to be addressed, especially as Craig has pointed out, how he felt coming into this one. My only, I don't know if it's a concern, as good as Leverkusen have been all season long, and for as much criticism we've heaped on Bayern Munich, they're still roughly within touching distance. And that's
We've just seen Bayern and this machine that they continue to show who they are in the Bundesliga. But if that Werder Bremen performance is repeated with any kind of consistency, they are going to fall so far behind Leverkusen. Because while, yes, some of their performances haven't been good, if I'm sitting in that dressing room, I am praising the way we manage to grind results out, that we keep playing until the 95th minute, if that's what it takes. And oftentimes, that's where what title seasons are built on, especially if you're a little bit of an underdog in terms of Bayern Munich and their successes, as Leverkusen have been. So if I'm Leverkusen, I'm really happy with where I am. I am mindful of the distance. But goodness me, Munich cannot. They cannot be any worse than they were against.
And Leverkusen, Bremen. They've also got stuff to deal with. I mean, on any other given day, yeah, they were playing Leipzig, who were in third at the time, and it was away from home. But in any other match, in that first half, in the first 20 minutes, they could have been 2 or 3 down. Mm-hmm. Could have been 2 or 3 down. That game could have been over. It wasn't, and Leverkusen were allowed back into it and dominated the game. But they were making mistakes at the back that I haven't really seen them make all year. Jonathan Tass had a great season, but he was all over the place in that first 45 minutes from a defensive aspect. So none of these, I suppose in any league, no team's perfect. But, you know, it's not within the realms of possibility that Leverkusen could allow Bayern Munich back into it. But I think Xavi Alonso he's got to guard against that. Listen, if they put a run together, Bayern Munich that is, fine. But let's not let them back into it by our performances. And that'll just keep the Leverkusen players on their toes.
Yep, so let's see how Bayern do fare tomorrow in a game that was originally cancelled due to bad weather. It is against Union. You can see it right here on ESPN Plus, 2:30 Eastern, with all the build-up to that game. Extra time is on the way next. Frank LeBoeuf's joining us.
Phone me. Oh, come on.
Oh, welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. It's Frank's birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Frank.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you very much, my dear.
Did you have a nice day?
Yeah, I had a very good day. And we had a very good dinner. My wife cooked and I had some friends and my son. And my daughter-in-law. So that was very nice. That was very nice.
What do you do for your 60th?
Did you send him a card?
What?
Did you send Frank a card?
I did. You know what it said on it? Shut up, Frank. Please.
Oh, God. As always, yeah.
Okay.
Frankie, shut up.
First question. On tonight's episode of Craig's Positivity Corner, Craig will...
Would you be positive about?
What are you going to bring us in the Positivity Corner?
I'm not in it.
You must be quite positive about Chelsea.
I can walk over there to the very dimly lit area that the director complained about the last time I went, but I shan't.
Why are you positive?
You're so touchy.
Why are you so positive in dimly lit areas?
Because you can't see me.
Can I just add as well that the second question is for Craig. Can we get another edition of Positivity Corner for extra time today?
Well, I don't need to answer today because... I don't need to go over to the corner of sarcasm because Chelsea didn't need any G'ing up today. I didn't have to sugarcoat it like, you know, the 1-0 loss away in Middlesbrough. So I don't have to. They did it all for me today.
Middlesbrough did it.
They did it.
Okay.
It's when Chelsea have a bad result. Oh, Villa coming up and Liverpool. That corner over there, you might have to get some new lighting in there because I might be over there. I might be over there on a regular basis in the next 2 games, possibly.
Well, we'll see. Only time will tell. Brian says, for Kay, although Chelsea ended Borough's Carabao Cup dreams with such an emphatic victory, thanks. Do you think Michael Carrick's team have what it takes to rebound and win promotion to the Premier League?
Well, they couldn't beat Rotherham.
Go on, okay, answer.
I'm not ruling it out. They're not far off the playoffs. And they made the playoffs last year. I just hope...
You need to go to the positivity corner.
I do. It's just hard after today. Listen, there are a lot of players missing. Players on international duty. Players who are cup-tied. Players who are injured. I'm going to say yes.
Oh, God! Oh, goodness me! Oh,
Middlesbrough, fantastic. Well, what a result today. Six. Only lost to six.
What happened on the weekend again?
Apparently, Middlesbrough, going for automatic promotion, drew at home with a team bottom of the league. This is your current Middlesbrough correspondent from the positivity corner, over and out.
You know what? You know, it's like, Craig, before, I don't know if it still exists, but you had the lottery to get the green card in America. Yeah. Maybe there will be a lottery for, and Middlesbrough can be promoted by the lottery next season.
It's not that
That may
far
be the only reason. Come on, you're 11th in the Championship.
Yeah, but look how tight the table really is, Frank. Look how tight the table is.
That's a bit like the people on the Titanic going, as it's going down, going, do you know, I think we got a chance. I think this ship looks okay here. As the bow just went, goes up, heads 10,000 feet below, playing the music going, keep playing, lads.
I'll tell you what we did win. The battle of the singing today at Stamford Bridge. You could only hear us all the way through the game.
Well done.
Thank you.
Well done.
There's not much else to do. Sing.
All right. Why does ESPN FC dislike Arsenal so much? The framing of coverage for Arsenal compared to other teams in Europe is generally negative on missing
content. Hold on. Who sent this in? Kieran Gibbs.
Well, it is Kenzo. Is that Kieran's nickname?
Yeah, must be.
That's his burner.
Didn't we have the same question about Manchester United the week before, Real Madrid the week before, and I don't know, another team
Chelsea a couple of weeks ago. When I used to travel around all the grounds in England doing Premier League and the FA Cups and all that years before I was
I have no idea.
I am
deported.
That's why I looked
at it. Deported.
I'm waiting to see.
Did you say deported? Kidnapped.
Kicked out.
Deported. Before I suddenly just appeared in this side of the pond, whenever I used to go around the grounds, it was very that. Why do you hate Man United when I go to Old Trafford? Why do you hate Chelsea? Why do you hate Tottenham? Why do you hate Arsenal? Every one of them thinks that you hate their club. It's quite scary.
It is. But how do we frame Arsenal positively, given what we've seen over recent weeks? They were top beginning of December. What's even Craig's positivity corner is a stretch.
Well, it's fine. They're flying under the radar now.
Oh, is that so? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Which is a good thing.
Tell you what, you are really positive, you know.
A good thing. They want to be chasing and not chase.
It's amazing.
Oh, well. You are so.
There you go.
Stevie and I were on. Nicol and I were on that day and looking at each other going, I'm quite on board with this one. Arsenal flying under the radar. And also, it's better to have less points than more points.
I was going to say it's better to have loved it less than to have never loved at all. All right.
I've never heard it framed like that.
What's that?
I didn't know where he was
less
going.
Less points than more points.
It's more beneficial at this time of the season to have less points than more points.
All right. Bashaka.
Maybe we're just missing something here.
Today is National Pie Day. Start, bench, or drop these pies.
Ooh.
Shepherd's pie, apple pie, or aloo pie.
What's aloo?
Curry. Aloo potato.
Oh, like a curry, potato curry.
Yeah, you can, yeah. So aloo is the Indian word for potato. Apple pie, aloo pie, shepherd's pie.
Well, you're what?
So that's what? So that's who I start, bench, and drop. Start apple.
Oh, God.
Bench aloo, drop shepherds.
Really?
He's going to be ringing the show again.
That's all right.
Huh?
Yeah. I love me an aloo pie. It's only small.
I'm not an apple pie guy. You have an apple pie?
Yeah,
but you've got a sweet tooth, haven't you?
I do.
But what with, Shaq?
Do you have cream or ice
cream?
Ice cream. It's got to be ice cream. Vanilla.
Pink space.
That was pie.
All right.
I'm dropping shepherd's.
Leave me alone with that.
I'm dropping shepherd's.
He's got, as we speak, you know, Stevie will have it all down his shirt.
I'm surprised he's not ringing us.
That's about to say. Last time somebody said something on Extra Time you didn't agree with, he called in.
I did love
that. That was what I was saying.
I'd been here since. Yeah. I got kidnapped here in 2009.
You got deported. You got deported into it.
I was deported from the UK. They removed my passport and any ability to go back there.
Stevie called in. Ah, goodness.
Yeah.
Right.
Wonderful moment.
All I've done is laugh.
All right. Have you ever played in a testimonial? If so, how differently do players view it compared to pre-season friendly?
Yeah, I couldn't give a stuff. Well, it was a pre-season friendly, actually. We went down, played in a couple, went down and played in Jimmy Phillips, who was a stalwart left-back for Bolton back in the day when Bolton were in the Premier League. And of course, a lot of these teams in England or a lot of these players would want... I was playing for Celtic at the time. And Celtic and Rangers, particularly Celtic, were a big draw for people having testimonials. Back in the day when the wages weren't, the salaries weren't astronomical, because, for example, Celtic, didn't matter where you went to play, they would take 10,000 with them. So they'd fill a stadium, so that's money. So we went down to play Bolton, and it was just off the back of the World Cup, France 98. I wish I'd brought that up, he'll say, won it. And
he did though.
By the time he comes back on screen, he'll have it on the top of his head. And so, having just played the World Cup with the boys, and then we're pre-season with Celtic, let's just say we were not taking this as serious as we might have. And we got to the hotel in Bolton, which was next to the new stadium, and next to the hotel there was a row of shops, and then there was one thing that was a very big allure for the players. A pub. And so we decided, most of us, the unprofessional element of the squad, which I was part of, we'd go and spend the night before Jimmy Phillips' testimonial in the pub, which we did.
And not seriously at all.
No.
Yeah.
I only put in one testimonial. Peter Beardsley's for Newcastle. We invite Celtic. This was the end of the season, so even less reason to take it with any seriousness at all. End of season friendly, to Craig's point, Celtic bring 10 or 15,000 down. I mean, it's a hop, skip and a jump from Glasgow.
You just know they're bringing a lot.
They bring 10 or 15,000. The stadium is packed.
Yep.
And they're actually winning. They're actually winning with about half an hour to go. Nobody's taking anything seriously. So Newcastle just start bringing, we just start bringing players on. It was so, at first the Celtic players seemed to get a little upset, and then they realised this really don't matter. So Newcastle first gave it about 16 players on the park, and Shearer picks the ball up in the box and just does this ridiculous dive. I mean, it clearly, you know, just does this big old dive. Refs gives a penalty so Peter Beardsley can score. He misses the first penalty. Rev gives it, keep him moved, take it over. Peter scored the penalty the last minute and everybody was happy. It was just a lot of fun. It really just turned out to be really fun.
Oh, Frank, do you remember any testimonials that you played in?
Yeah, the first year that I spent with Craig at Chelsea, we had the Kevin Hitchcock's testimonial. I think we played against a Dutch team. I think it was PSV Eindhoven, I think it was that club. That was a great game. Stamford Bridge was packed. I think Kevin made lots of money. Happy for him. And I think we won on top of it. But it was nice. It was really nice.
I don't even remember that.
It was different than a friendly game because you want to win. I think you want to win for the players who had that tribute. Yeah, it was the first year. I think it was, Kevin Hitchcock.
I should remember, bearing in mind, he was best man at my wedding.
Yeah.
But I don't.
Okay.
Maybe you'd been to the pub at the end of the row of shops.
Yeah.
I got offered a testimonial, at Chelsea. And my contract, the contract that I turned down before I left to go to Celtic, they offered me a 4-year contract. A new one, which would have taken me to a testimonial, but I'm very self-aware. Many people won't think that. But I thought to myself, who's going to turn up for my testimonial? It was like one man and a dog. So I was like, nah, I'll take the money. I'm going to go to Celtic. You know what I mean? This happened to a few players, that for no bad reason, Like Johnny Bumstead was at Chelsea, stalwart, got a couple of thousand there because the weather was terrible. They played, I think, Real Sociedad. And Stevie tells a great, not a great story, Graham Sharp at Everton, who was a Scottish striker, fantastic player, Sharpie. Great stalwart in that Everton side with Andy Gray and Lineker and whoever they bought, Peter Reid. What a team they had. He had a testimonial. And the weather, apparently Stevie tells the story, the weather was so bad in Liverpool. It was so bad, literally nobody turned up. Literally. I mean, that's a choker, isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that you were like, nah.
That's sad.
Yeah. I didn't want to embarrass myself. I went, any chance I can just take the money? I'll take the extra.
Sun is shining. Sun is shiny. Nobody.
I'll tell you what I'll do.
In Real Madrid, nobody showed up.
Hutchinson, the chief executive, I said, tell you what I'll do. We'll skip the testimonial, my old pal. Forget that. I said, I'll just take the extra money now instead of waiting to see how many people turn up. I didn't do it.
Very humble, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
Self-aware.
Very humble, very positive.
Last question for Frank. Will you be reaching out to Karim Benzema directly to urge him to sign on with Chelsea in light of his desire to leave the Saudi League?
Well, if I call him, I reach him out, we'll ask him how fit he is, because I want to make sure he's going to be useful and he's not completely retired. But of course, if Karim Benzema still has the willingness of doing his best, getting his best and getting in shape, as he was for Real Madrid, yes, he's more than welcome, and I will urge him to come to score goals for Chelsea, for sure. For sure, you cannot deny that Karim Benzema the last decade was the best striker in the world. So you would love to have the same kind of player at the same level for Chelsea, for sure.
All right, well, that will do it. For
Frank, keep his number in the phone, do you? Frank, keep Karim Benzema's number?
Blocked him. Benzema blocked Frank.
Block Frank. Block you.
Yeah, he already blocked me. Yeah.
Frank only texts a generic text to all of us anyway. We've established.
Let me tell you, if we want any top player on the phone immediately, this here bat phone is a hotline to all the top stars. I've got them all in there. Believe me.
No, I did not. I want to know who's the most famous name in it.
Me.
So humble.
You have your name.
I don't mix. I'm a man of the people. I don't mix with famous people.
Fair enough. All right.
Being that phone, you've got to be a joiner, a plumber, or an electrician.
And local else, as well.
You're out.
He keeps it local as well, does Craig Burley, because he's a man of the people. All right. Thanks so much for sending in your questions. We'll be back tomorrow.